on my own. In the year 1894, we parted with my father's business forever. That is, I, my brother, and my sister Anna. Our father now paid out mother's dowry with interest and without hesitation. For all three of us, it amounted to about 800 guldens. His generous act required courage. It is not easy to lose both able partners and a good deal of the capital all at once. But our father never was short of pride, courage, and the desire to do good for his children. In 1894, my brother Antonin registered in his name a shoemaking business in Zlín. According to trade law, I was registered as his journeyman. But there was a quiet understanding that all results will be divided equally between the three of us. Our independent entrepreneurship was motivated by our desire for better life. We started a modern business. We established precise working hours from 6 in the morning till 6 in the evening, with a 1-hour lunch break at noon. We introduced wage payments on a weekly basis for us and our journeymen. This was then considered infeasible for small businesses. In those days, it was customary that wages were paid to journeymen only as the sales money were taken in. There was no fixed and regular working day. One usually worked from daybreak until about 10 o'clock at night, and on Saturdays or before fairs until the next morning. At the same time, the Blue Monday was honored until the next work itself too seriously. The young people between 18 to 20 years of age do not usually need much money in order to feel rich, and we have enjoyed our riches to the fullest. Although we did keep our promise not to smoke or drink, as we pledged to our father, we did use up our freedom by wasting our time. We have cultivated numerous contracts with better society and were ashamed for our work. Equipment and material was bought on installments via a 6-month bill of exchange, which was usually extended when payable. 1 year after we invented our better life, our creditors started to grow increasing by wary of further extending our bills and thus perpetuating our business glory. They emphatically demanded their own. My brother was about to enter his military service and considered it inevitable that our business should fall apart and we should declare bankruptcy. Our 1 year independence thus ended with the loss of the entire invested capital of 800 guldens, besides that we also managed to squander about 8,000 guldens of our creditors' money. It did sound impossible, but it was true. Until that time, I have never burned in my brain by thinking about what is bankruptcy. Even subconsciously, I was laughing at slogans like, "The debts don't get wet," and such. Suddenly, I was staring the bankruptcy in the eyes, and my hair started to bristle. I saw that bankruptcy is actually death, and I wanted to live. My longing for physical existence was equally strong as my opposition to moral death. The penalty which I imposed on my body and life took the form of labor and self-denial to repay for the flightiness of the first year of our independence. It was my guarantee that never again would anything like that happen in my life. There was no bankruptcy. Our creditors, when they saw my transformation, did not insist on immediate debt repayment, and some of them have remained my friends until this very day. I managed to repay all our debts within 2 years at no detriment to creditors whatsoever. During the years 1922 and 1923, after the revaluation of the crown, there was time of general declarations of debt settlements in our republic. Some innocent establishments fell into the settlements, But of course, some others took advantage of the seemly opportunity. Business ethics and mutual trust started to decline rather rapidly. Even the best did not appear to be good enough. At that time, I found it useful to explain my views on bankruptcy as follows. Our enemies are broadcasting that we are bankrupt. My associates walk around me fearful for their jobs and incomes. Our customers look at their shoes and search their conscience whether it was not precisely that hundred they just saved on their price which caused the disaster invented by our competitors and spread around by unfriendly press. I must tell my workers and customers the truth, because I do want them to believe me again next time. Our slanderers were incorrect when they wrote about my riches. I do not possess my wealth. I only have shoes for my customers. That's the same kind of possession as telescope represents for an astronomer, or violin for a musician. Without it, I could not give my workers work and my customers the shoes. I would then be about as useful to the world as a musician without his instrument. That I am not a bankrupt you can realize very easily, because you know that a bankrupt wants his creditors to forgive him, and they would not forgive him if he would keep insisting that he was not bankrupt. It is more difficult to convince you that I cannot ever be bankrupt. These are the reasons. First, I come from the old world, when people still believed that bankruptcy was dishonorable deed, especially so when a bankrupt ended up better off and his creditors worse off. Second, I already learned during my adolescence how to overcome bankruptcies. When I was 18, I took part in founding today's establishment under the name of my elder brother and with participation of my sister, with total capital 800 guldens. We considered ourselves to be rich. We did not lack neither time nor money for our pleasures. But, within a year, we lacked the money to pay our debts and for goods. Futile distrainments only disclosed no assets, and the books showed numerous unpaid bills of exchange. At that time, my brother started his 3-year military service when I recognized that a balance sheet deficit does not yet imply bankruptcy. In assessing the assets, businessman rarely takes into account his energy, diligence, and business talent, yet these are his greatest assets. But I did not possess even these assets. I was brought up in bourgeois town, and I used to look down on physical work as something undignified. I did not know of any other kind of work, yet I did not go bankrupt. The shame I felt for the bankruptcy of my brother's establishment, for which I shared the responsibility, taught me to work and save both time and money. With my own labor, I overcame the bankruptcy and paid off my creditors in full. Thus I came to the conviction that bankruptcy is a question of morals. As to the rest, I am sure that many of you remember the story well. There are also bankruptcies caused by misfortune. There are even bankrupts who do not wish to survive their shame. But neither these nor the light-minded, well-fed and happy bankrupts represent any guarantee for the creditors. To creditor, the only guarantee is a businessman willing to pledge to his creditors not only all of his visible possessions, but willing to give himself in the form of work performed perhaps to the collapse. On such human virtues stand large enterprises, big banks, and empires. Germans call it Geschäftstreue, business trust, and Schiller wrote a great poem about it, Die Burgschaft, guarantee. I do not wish to dissuade you from withdrawing your savings from the company savings bank. I just want to tell you that before you entrust your savings to the big palaces, you should take a good look at how high are the moral values of people who work in them. My neighbours, the shoemakers in Zlín, found themselves often in the similar situation as I did. The difference was that for many of them, bankruptcy led to their physical death. In the worst predicament of all of us was actually my uncle František Bata. He was the first shoemaker I robbed of his independence. I visited him just before establishing our own independence. He lied in his bed, buried in the straw. All his clothing was stacked upon him, and even though it was early in the afternoon, his little chamber was in almost total darkness. His window was covered with something to prevent drafts. It was very cold. I looked around for some fuel and food, but near the small and rusty iron stove was nothing suitable for fire. Obviously, he had not made any fire for a long time. On the bed, there was a chunk of very hard bread, gnawed and nibbled over on all sides. My uncle finally freed his head from the rags and tatters in order to see the visitor. He recognized me immediately. When I asked if he was sick, he insisted that he just caught a bit of cold. He was very much at a loss. He apologized about the looks of his home. I told him that I would send something to eat, but he refused. He pointed to the piece of bread and said he still has 4 guldens for the hides, and that he will be able to sell something again. He was proud, and would rather die than ask for a bite to eat. But he was not a good craftsman, not even a mediocre one. One could see that at fairs, when he was among the others. On his pole, he had at best 4 pairs of small shoes, and he was happy when he sold 2 pairs and took in 3 guldens. My uncle was very slow, but he was not lazy. Even this hibernation in bed served its purpose. It was February, and there was no prospects for business. There were, of course, many people like my uncle in the area, hiding in bed during the times of worse prospects, avoiding the expenditures for fuel, light, clothing, and partly even for food. Those who did not put up the light through the entire winter, arguing that they did not earn enough for that, they were many. My uncle was very hard-working and persevering, but nobody in the area was looking for such rare virtues. There was not yet today's dead-end local railway in our area. I taught him how to sew children's bubble chess. He made 20 pairs a week, even such modest, but permanent and regular income helped him back to health, even his threatening cough went away. Moss caulking disappeared from the window, the chamber air was fresh, there was a fire regularly flickering in the stove, and a clean sheet appeared on a made-up bed.